at that.
Rock and roll, look at that.
You can literally see the light.
I was gonna say, I see your OnlyFans light in those shades, and I think it's fantastic. And how was spin class, Mr. LA?
It was so good. It's like you calling me Mr. LA, me looking at myself wearing glasses while I have a light in the reflection. I'm just like, who have I become?
Exactly who you want to be. Right?
The spin class was great. I just like, and I don't know if y'all are this way. It's like we all have like our addictions in a way. And
we
like
were just talking about addiction, actually. Yeah. So that's appropriate.
Right. And I guess like I have this like weird feeling at five, just if I haven't worked out properly in like 2 to 3 days, then I get anxious about it. And like I just don't feel as good as I could. I'm like, I know I could feel better if I just like kill myself for an hour.
If you just go get some of those endorphins going that don't come with, you know, a prescription.
Yeah, exactly. So
I get you 100%.
And I'm
well,
out
we
of.
I do want to say welcome, Brian Bogart, stand-up Thanks comedian so and actor. So happy to have you here. I'm Haley.
Haley.
I'm Johnny.
And this
Johnny.
Is Brian.
So
and
good
this
to meet
is
y'all.
Johnny.
Haley. Haley.
Brian.
Brian.
Day
Three,
of
oh, one. All right.
We
oh
like,
my gosh.
We like the it's deer in headlights look now. When people don't know what we're doing.
No, there's Sorry. A whole thing, and I feel bad because I was like, yeah, totally, I'm Brian. And then y'all were like doing a thing, and I'm like, oh my God.
No,
I'm
about you're,
no yeah, you're totally fine. That's part of the fun for us.
It yeah. sounded like deer in the headlights kind of thing.
I yeah. had that moment.
We enjoy that. So we appreciate yeah, you playing along.
My cousin and I, too, y'all are siblings, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My cousin and I have a podcast and it's called Guantanamo Bays because we're both Cuban, and it always opens like after a conversation, we go into a segue and they're like, hey, welcome to the Guantanamo Bays podcast. And then at the same time, we go, a Cuban cousin Kiki.
I love it. I have been looking at some of your clips that you have on Instagram. You guys have some interesting topics of conversation. I do enjoy it.
That's funny. What caught your attention out of curiosity?
I do believe that you were reading some sort of, I don't know if it was a text message or what it was.
It was like some smut. It was some gay literature that Julian brings.
Oh, it's literature.
Yeah, you could call it that.
Literature. Okay.
But it was like this, yeah, you know, he'll bring a gay item of the week. That's what we call it. It's one of our segments. And it'll be a physical yeah. item and a news item. And so this physical item was from this book he read that was like about some real underground, you know, like dark, you know, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road kind of gay culture stuff. And it's like
dark
this
web.
Really explicit personal ad that like really makes you question, like, you know, should this be legal kind of thing? Like, how far is too yeah. far for kink? And so, yeah.
I guess sometimes doesn't that just make you feel better that you're normal? Right.
Yeah. More
like,
than
at least
that.
You're
yeah.
having to go chase these yeah. kind of things in life. You know, you're like, it's sure. We'll deal with like kicking cigarettes and, you know, things like that. We can, those kind of addictions are like,
no,
tame,
I chase,
right?
I chase a different dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the attention of the audience when you do stand up and acting. Is that, would that be any part of the reasons we get into it?
Yeah. I'll say like the rush of performance. And maybe the adoration of a crowd is like a factor in that whole thing. But also really when you feel like you nail it in the sense of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And when those things intertwine, that's like when it's at its best. And that really is, you know, like that's a dragon right there. You know, that's
yeah.
my.
Yeah, for sure.
Whatever the toughest dragon type there was in Harry Potter. I remember a Rhodesian Ridgeback. No, that's a dog. It was like one of the. That's my
sure, whichever one.
Uber dragon. Yeah, that's my Uber dragon.
It's a Hungarian horntail.
Hungarian horntail, yeah.
If I can bring my nerd self out, but like, you know, I'm with the Norwegian Ridgeback too. Like totally good, that's a good breed too.
Yeah.
Right.
I appreciate that. And I feel bad as a Harry Potter fan that like I couldn't on command.
All of the Harry Potter fans can send their hate mail to us at johnnyhaleydof@gmail.com. We will read it out loud.
And follow at brian.bogart on Instagram. And
yeah,
all the hate mail.
Please and thank you. We were happy to read it. It's content for us. You're doing our job for us, and we appreciate you.
Yeah.
You're sure.
Thank you.
So can I be the pretentious asshole in the room and say, Bogart, any relation to Humphrey?
great grandfather.
Shut up. No.
No. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say,
I can't back that up.
I was gonna say, I want to know how that goes, but
no, you think I'd be doing this podcast if I was Humphrey Bogart's? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. You would. You absolutely would not be.
People will ask me, you know, like any relation. I'm like, do you think I would be in this Trader Joe's, or do you think I would be in this Ralph's?
I would be in the French Riviera right now. I would not be talking to you.
I'll be at the Gelson's in Monaco. You know, like
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I love it. So we do want to talk to you a little bit about your stand-up and your acting. How did you get into performing? You know, what's the thing that inspired you?
Yeah, it's funny. Like a buddy and I, who's also like an actor, I went to UT with him. He's in LA now. And we were talking about like some of the earliest, you know, memories of acting that we ever had. And like really like the inception of like, wow, I think I want to be an actor was in first grade. There was a kind of like an original really lame musical that's like a salute to TV, and it's like I Love Lucy and Cheers, and I auditioned for the part of Ricky Ricardo, which makes sense because I'm Cuban, obviously, but I was like so young,
obviously
I didn't know I was Cuban, you know, like so like that the fact that it was that was just like kind of meant to be, you know, that Desi Arnaz is also cute, but like
it's just
oh,
that's like, you know, divine intervention in some ways, right? Just let you know, guess what? This is what you're supposed to do. Go do it.
Later, connecting the dots, I was like, oh my God, it was my destiny.
Right.
But
you've got the right last name and you had the, you know, you had the right ethnicity. It's perfect.
Right. But also this last name is a double-edged sword because it can only lead to disappointment. You know, like there's the excitement of like, oh, Bogart is famous last name. Oh, well, at least it like sounds like a show busy name. But then they kind of expect you to be this like show busy guy. And then when you're just like this kind of straightforward comic, or, you know, like I'm not like a waka waka Brian Bogart, you know, like I'm not making silly. Like, I don't know.
You're not
like
vaudeville.
Right, right. Although my cousin and I together are extremely vaudevillian, and we are doing our first show at Upright Citizens Brigade tomorrow as a Guantanamo Bays. And so it's like a proof of concept show called A Spank. And if it goes well, so really excited about that.
Very cool. I mean, definitely want to hear more about that. Whatever you want to share about it.
Yeah.
This is a first live sort of thing that you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done like a sketch that we wrote together, you know, kind of like as a, just like as part of his musical improv, and I did stand up. So we've done like a variety show, very low stakes variety show, and I've taken classes at UCB. He has two for musical improv, and then one day we went to a show. It was kind of disappointing, and we were like, we're better than those showrunners, you know. So like I submitted the show. 2 months later, they're like, we want to give y'all a shot for A Spank, you know. And so it's going to be a variety show. I do stand up, we do the sketch, he does musical improv. We were going to do it alongside this one play the day of The Spank, which was last week. An hour, no, 30 minutes before going to the tech rehearsal, I get an email from UCB being like, our tech guy didn't show up, we have to cancel the show. And we got other, you know, our friends like who flew in early after Thanksgiving to attend for us.
Oh,
like
shit.
You know, it's like our schedule's fucked with their schedule's fucked with So the people who are doing The Spank with us, they're like, hey, we're actually staging it at a friend's backyard. Would you guys still like to do your thing? So we did it in a space, and like a bunch of UCP people were still there. And then UCB felt so bad, they gave us an evening slot, which is now going to be tomorrow. You know, they're like, can you do next Tuesday? So, you know, now we've had a chance to actually do it there. It killed. Like, we loved how it went. And that, you know, we're just so thankful. Caroline Cotter is her name. I just have to shout her out for like letting us.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And really happy with how it went. And now we feel really tight and ready for. And then I'm hosting an open mic tonight, so I'll get to practice my set, you know, for the show tomorrow. So it's like, we feel really good about it.
Just super perfect timing.
Yeah, and I wish you guys were here to like watch it and hang out.
Right. We would absolutely come over and watch it and hang out. We would have such a great time. You and Johnny Ginger, you know, like I would just make fun of you being daywalkers for sure. You know, only for about 5 minutes. I promise.
You know the distinction too. You know the distinction between a pure ginger and a daywalker like us.
Oh man, yeah, it comes with its perks.
Yeah,
it comes with its perks. Yeah, you can handle the cold up here in the Dakotas better than some of us can.
Well, yeah, that's true.
You've got that Viking Norse blood in you. You know, you can deal with it a little bit more. Yeah.
There's that German stubborn redhead.
Yeah, I do not. I look more like someone that the Vikings conquered.
Right? Yeah. You look like Conquest.
Yeah. I'm just meat.
All right.
Well, very cool, though, that you have those things going on. That is, you know, that's going well for you. And we absolutely, you know, tell us more about it. We would love to be there in person if we could. We're going to manifest that from the universe. But until such time, you know, we're happy to keep up with your progress via Zoom here.
And if there's anything to like just take away for anyone listening who's like remotely interested in like not just, you know, doing anything like this or understanding it better, mm-hmm. how you could apply it to their own disciplines or their own careers or lives is like, you know, it was just like kind of a natural next step of things. And it's like the slow burn, you know, sometimes you do get lucky and you get noticed fast and you get plucked out, or you could like create a lot of attention for yourself on social media because like you cracked the code there. And that's like never been my forte necessarily. So it's like, you know, I got to do a combination of like being somewhat active, just like so people know I exist and remember to book me. But then also like, you know, I'm more of a stage guy, so I'm more like want to wow people in person so that like maybe someone will like cast me in something or like, you know, give me free reign to write a show, which like, you know, I have my pilot. And so it's like, you got to have your pitch deck ready, but you also like, you know, like this kind of started when I was like, okay, what theater in town, you know, would I want to work with? And I'm like, okay, UCB has sent a lot of people to SNL recently, and that seems like something I'd want to do. So I'll take a class there, you know, got to take levels 1, 2, 3, 4. Like that takes time. And then after that, it's like you got to pitch a show, which is like its own process. Then you got to wait. You like, hopefully they say yes.
Is it as painful to do a pitch as I have heard it is a question.
And here's kind of so like, yes, it always sucks. Right. Whenever. You know,
expect it to suck.
Yeah. Yeah. Just expect everything that isn't the exact part you don't want to do to suck. Right. Okay. It's like. I get in here because like I said, it's the rush of live performance or the rush of connecting and feeling like you really nailed it and pushing yourself and like all that stuff. And that's great. But to like make money off of that or to have a career in that, you're going to have to do a lot of shit you don't want to do because that's like what business is. Right? It's doing shit we don't want to do to advance our own like socioeconomic situation, however you want to define it. But
yeah,
it's like there's a necessary part to that if you want to like kind of be career successful, but like that's not everything to people. And so
people
are pages.
You got to balance it, right? Like follow the highest joy and also, you know, do the taking care of business things that maybe are not quite as exciting.
And where I was lucky was that, you know, kind of in a vacuum, we'd written a sketch together. We had pitched our, you know, Guantanamo Bays as like a show or like to a screenwriting contest. And so we'd already had a proof of concept. So I was able to like copy and paste a lot of that into the UCB pitch. So it's not as painful because I've like done the building blocks, right? I did all this stuff in a vacuum so that when like this opportunity kind of presents itself, I'm like, okay, thank God I don't have to start from scratch. You know, so that would have been a lot more painful. So like never stop writing. Like if something comes to your mind, I have a Google Doc of just shit that like just the most random stream of consciousness. Some of it's organized, some of it's not, but like as long as you're getting your thoughts out.
I have a house full of notebooks and I have told my sister this is my legacy that I am leaving is that I don't know who I am leaving it to, but someone is going to have just mass amounts of notebooks full of my psychosis and I can't wait for you to read it all.
Like travel journals are important to me. Whenever I travel, I always like keep a log. So I'm like, if nothing successful, like quote unquote successful happens in my life, like before I kick it, I'm just like, here you go. Here's like the crazy shit I did.
Yeah.
Like leaving. Yeah.
Captain's log.
Exactly. It's my captain's log. So that's never a bad legacy, no matter who you are.
I love it.
That's right. Now, like back to writing and stuff like that. I noticed on your YouTube that you have a lot of stand up and you have a lot of sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you prefer? What do you get out of each that you like? Because a lot of people, a lot of stand-ups don't resort to sketch comedy. A lot of sketch comics don't resort to stand-up. So it's kind of interesting to find somebody that's kind of in the gray area of doing
both. People are stupid and think that you can't do both.
Of course you can do both. You know, it's just some people prefer to.
And some people are purists. And there are great comedians who are purists. And you know, like I'm not saying this about anyone specific. I think sometimes too, maybe if you're a stand-up and you're really good at stand-up, that doesn't mean, and it doesn't have to mean that you're a good actor or a good sketch writer, sketch actor or anything like that. But if you're like kind of called to do that and you kind of like don't feel good about where you are skill-wise with that, you're going to shit on it. You know, you're going to.
Yeah, for sure.
Insecurity in your inability, which is not your fault. Like, once again, no one should expect that of you. But like comics are the most thin-skinned, sardonic people in the world. The irony that like so many of them can give it and not take it is just it's a sad irony of like comedians in general that I wish we could kind of get over a little bit more.
Great.
But yeah, it's kind of like that same thing. Like I ran this open mic in Austin called Banter, where after comedian sets, I would do a Q&A with them. And it was really polarizing. Like, what comic doesn't want to practice their Leno or their Conan sets and interview afterward? But so many are just like, ooh, why is he asking me questions? I just want to do my set. Well, you can do that, you know, but like, and then eventually, like most everyone ended up really liking it and like really liked Banner. So like we do that as a format for a show every once in a while. But
I mean, I was going to say that's kind of interesting to me, though. Like, well, yeah, why wouldn't you want to practice that, you know, being on Jimmy Fallon or, you know, Colbert, whatever? Like,
it's
why wouldn't
we're
you
sardonic
wanna...
and thin-skinned. That's why.
That is very interesting to me. You know, that's one of the things that like John and I talk about too, is like how you deal with hecklers and stuff like that. Like, there are some comics who like really handle hecklers well and almost kind of play off of it. Like, it's almost a piece of what they do, right?
Yeah.
Like
that sort
of like almost like a heckler crowd work.
And some
element.
Comics, and I won't say who, especially with the advent of social media, but like a lot of them will have put plants in the audience.
For sure.
It's like, whoa. He handled this heckler. I'm like, well, yeah, of course he did. He wrote that script. You know, like I could make anyone look stupid if I wrote a script to make them look stupid.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, I guess, you know, performance, it's a performance art, however you do it, I suppose. Right.
Sure.
Like, so
but
I
with
guess.
With hecklers in the wild, real hecklers.
In the wild.
Yeah. Here's my rule. Well, and not really like, well, yeah, it's my rule. And like, I don't know where I read it or whose advice I got this from, but. It's somewhere in comedy annals, and it was like some of the best advice for heckling I'd ever read. But it was like, and it totally worked every time I've done it now. But the first time someone like heckles, you know, like maybe they shout something and you like laugh it off, right? Like, don't come down on them, even if they're in the wrong. Like, hey, yeah, whatever, buddy. And then what now like everyone's annoyed, but everyone's like, oh, that comic is so cool that he didn't just like rain shit on this guy.
Yeah.
Second they do it again, they've lost all benefit of the doubt. The second one's probably going to be a little bit bolder because you kind of now like gave them a pass. Now they're like, oh, we'll wait until they get this next one. And then now you have all the ammunition, you know, like you can use their first heckler's ammunition. You can use their second heckler's ammunition and really make your case for why they suck. And that's when it gets really fun.
And that's when it gets really fun. Right? I love it.
Well, we had Mark Christopher Lawrence on here, and he was explaining to us like how he deals with hecklers, and he'll usually give them two chances.
That's,
you know, he'll like just play it off, and then he's going to make the attention on you. You know what I mean? He'll give you what you want, but he'll give you what you want in a way that you don't want it, basically. You know what I mean?
Well, they're like, everyone else in the audience is going to like what they see except for one person.
Of course. It's entertaining.
Well, and
look at it.
Have you ever had anything that's like escalated to the point someone needed to like be removed or anything like that? I mean, how often is that actually, you know, the nightmare scenario? How real is it?
Yeah, it happens every once in a while. Not like to me necessarily, where people have heckled me to the point that they've had to be escorted. But like, there's been like, I've seen plenty of rowdy incidents in bars. Probably like my best heckler, like my best destruction of a heckler, like after I moved to LA, I've been married, but my wife and I were separated, and so I was doing like a bit in LA, and it was going to be about like how I'm married and I'm separated and all this stuff, and like what I'm going through, and I didn't have a ring, you know, at this point, so I opened the bit with like, I'm married, and there's nothing worse than a comic who's a heckler. It's like, like some comics can help themselves. It's never really like super seasoned comics, but some of them, like, you know, it's usually like a new comic thing if you like still somehow heckle comics, but it's like, okay, this might be a sloppy metaphor, but in Django, remember how he said that there's like slaves hate black slave owners more than anything? It's like, that's how you feel as a comic. You're like, I trusted you, man. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
We're supposed to be on the same team here.
Exactly. So I was like, I'm married. And then she goes, where's your ring? And that just like out of nowhere, right? And I just like shocked me. And I was just like,
let me tell you. I'm going to say this in defense of ladies. That might not have been, that may not have been a comic response. That may have been like a legit, like something in her past was triggered. She was like, oh, really? Are you like, what, you know?
I have zero doubt. I have zero doubt that that plays a factor, right? But it's like, but you hear that, or it's like, hey, I'm a comic telling you what's happening in my life. And like, maybe let's see where it goes first before you try to. You know, so I was like,
well,
I'm married.
Also, if you're a comic and you know that you're talking about something personal and it's probably real, like, I don't need the extra knife. Thank you. I'm having a hard enough time. I'm trying to make some lemons out of lemon or lemonade from lemons here.
Hear brother out, you know, like that's what we're here for. So I was like, she goes, where's your ring? And I was just shocked for a second. I was like, where's your manners? And the room just died. And I was like, and the thing is, I'd had a really bad open mic set up to that point. And I was like, thank you so much. Like, your heckle saved my whole set. So I couldn't even be that mad.
Right. Hey, there you go. It turned out to work, right? So maybe it was, again, that divine intervention. It's just kismet. It works out the right way somehow, right?
Chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Absolutely.
However you got to do it. I mean, if you put ranch on anything, it's good, right?
Which is really, you know, that's how he felt about the spank and like Caroline opening up her friend's backyard to us to perform our sketch and stuff like that. You know, it's like we ended up getting, you know, like meeting a lot of people within UCB there, you know, at that, and we got a trial run at it. And now we're like in a better, so, you know, once again, it's like, I was incensed. And my cousin, he's very dramatic. I'm always talking him down off of ledges. So when he's like, Brian, this email's like pretty aggressive. I'm like, okay.
You need to dial it back just a little bit.
Yeah, if he's telling me to dial it back, then okay. All right, you're probably right.
Yeah, for sure. So back to the, let's say back to the heckler stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Or the unwanted stuff of the comedy world. Have you ever been either forced or just walked off the stage? Have you ever walked off in the middle of a set?
That's a really good question. Hold on, and real quick, if I could just like share an anecdote of sorts, something like related to heckling. And this, I've been doing, you know, stand up for like 7-8 years now. Like, you know, my first open mic was 11-12 years ago. But if I count like the years, like the cumulative years that I've really committed to it, like 7 to 8 feels accurate. And like, you know, that's kind of like where I've. So
you can absolutely say since first grade when you had that first, you know, you can absolutely go back that far.
I wasn't doing so much observational humor back then. You know, I wasn't doing as much stand up, but like in terms of like that specific art form. And so I, you know, I did it for a few years, obviously before COVID, done it a few years since COVID. And my first show back in Austin when COVID, you know, was starting to open up, and my parents came out. You know, that's where I'm from, and they'll come out and see like some. And now that Austin's comedy scene's really blown up, it's like that. You know, I have like a lot more shows to take them to whenever they're out here, or whenever I'm out there. So there's this one in Georgetown, and there's this I'm blanking on his last name, Ryan. His name's Ryan, and. You know, what he's doing are clearly jokes, but it's like very Anthony Jeselnik, where everything is like the darkest thing you've ever heard.
Oh, yeah. You know, sure. Like,
and he opens with like, you know, when COVID happened, they released a lot of sexual predators from jail. So I thought I'd stop by. So like, that's how he opens. Right. And then you can just imagine what the rest of his set is like. So my mom has been the mother of a performer for a long time. When she started heckling him, and I'm like humiliated, and she, like, her and her friend are just like, boo, like, sit down. And like, I get it. He's
like,
saying,
really, we're just very upset with the content, huh? Just not having it.
Yes. She has not since then, you know, and like, but I approached her. I was like, mom, like, you can't do this, you know, and like,
you can't do this.
Yeah, yeah. So
this is the bit. This is part of it. Like, you're supposed to be upset.
Yeah, and just like, I cannot have my mom be the heckler, right? Like, I can't be the comic whose mom comes every once in a while and heckles and ruins everyone's party.
I think is probably why we would just not bring our parents, Johnny, you know?
I think
they're all off the list for being invited, is what I'm going to say.
No, no, no. I'm going to be honest. My mother, she would be the heckler 100%.
They're like, nope, Cindy, you can't come. Sorry, you're not invited.
Oh, yeah. My mom would be the heckler for sure.
I will say, and in Austin, it's usually suburban moms who I get heckled for, but it's like such a well-meaning heckling, like, oh, do you know, like, the Curtis kid from Cedar Park or whatever?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no. Oh, that's cute, though. They're just really genuinely interested, and they probably think that you're adorable.
Right, right.
Probably.
You know, when I show up and I do it, I'm like, I'm from Austin. I know I look like someone who moved here to ruin it. And that she's like, that's the same page. It's really polarizing. That joke does better in L.A. than it does in Austin, but that's not surprising because everyone.
Well, I was going to say that's a joke that you could also equally do in the Dakotas where we're from. You know, that's something that we have the all you Californians coming out here. And I can't understand why. Do you not understand what winter is?
No, I've always known. That's why I've always lived in, you know, warmer climates. I know it's out there. Yeah.
No, good for you. That's the goal, is to get away from
my stupid comedy friends who are like, I'm going to go to New York and act and do. No, fuck that. Jesus.
I am with you 100%. Streets are filled with trash and it's cold as fuck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're agreeing with you, but we do live in a place that gets negative 40. So.
Yeah, but with a way lower cost of living, you know.
For sure.
People
stay away.
I guess, you know, what price are you willing? What price are you willing to put on sunshine is the question, right?
It is priceless, right? Because like, it does affect your mood.
It is.
Yeah, yeah, like, you know,
seasonal depression is a real thing, and we are dealing with it like 100%.
Yeah, y'all are the unsung heroes for sure, and you're just getting into it. I mean, I'm serious though, because it's like, that's also why, once again, I want to move to New York to freeze, be depressed, and pay out the ass for everything.
Right, like, living the thrill.
Because it has a great food scene. Like, what? Like, yes, that's part of it. But, and great comedy scene. Like, and cold places breed like tough people, and I love tough people. But you know, LA is full of tough people because, like, one, for a sunny place, it is a hard city. And so many people here also come from like tough places, you know, and they're like grinders. Yep.
And that's why they came there, right? Because they're looking for something new and to, you know, get a little
like
bit
how
of
I
that.
Came from the mean streets of North Austin suburbs.
Right.
You know?
I mean, we came from the mean streets of towns that are like less than 1,000 people. Like we like to say, if you go into a Walmart wherever you are, you're shopping with more people than we grew up with.
That's like, crazy.
It's a different kind of flavor. Not everybody understands.
Where would y'all where would y'all hang out or like, you know, go?
In high school, we thought it was fun to go to the little coffee shop / flower shop in town and sit around during the day and have some cappuccinos. Yeah. But if you were going to go drink, then you just went and hang. John, you know, we've talked about this, hanging out at the section line.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you don't have a place to party, you make a place to party. Like, a section line is a road that's basically grass with two tire marks. You know what I mean?
I picture, you know, like, I know y'all aren't in Nebraska, but I picture, like, the cornfields, right? It's like,
it's not a from Nebraska. It's pretty close. But I don't know, you would go drink on a section line or something. But I was when I was in high school, I played music. But I was a relatively straight-laced kid. I didn't do drugs and I didn't drink. I just played music. And like, I don't know, in a small town, you kind of have to find your own lane and just.
Yeah, totally.
You know, you got to find something to keep you busy or else drinking is going to consume you.
True. I mean, so many people I know from small towns are so successful because, you know, it took such a tenacity to like get out of there in the first place. And then like, you know, like to have gotten out of there, you had to have been really good or really obsessed with one particular thing. So like, you know, to be successful at something, you have to become like a machine of it. So like if you are a musician, it's like you became a music machine. You played, you produced, or like you learned how to use GarageBand and whatever. And, you know, I have a buddy from Silsbee, Texas. He lives in L.A. with his wife now. And, you know, I knew him in Austin. We went to UT together. Joe Daly, I'll shout him out. And and he's just a total machine. Like he plays guitar and sings and writes and like immediately found his tribe with improv and sketch here in LA and like found his theater and like is already doing shows after only being here like, you know, one and a half to two years, which is like nothing in LA time, you know. So it's like and he my another good buddy of mine from Atlanta, Texas, where Ellen DeGeneres is from. So it's crazy that like his name is Wilt Britton. He's a very successful actor. And there's like five people in Atlanta. Two of them are famous, you know? So it's like, there's that says something about, you know, the people who come out of those places.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, I mean, one person that's from about 45 miles from my hometown is Lawrence Welk. So That's about our claim to fame.
Yeah, that's who we have. No, but it is true. You have, when you have a drive to kind of like get out of just the normal, what you've seen everyone doing, and I like that you say it that way. You kind of have to be a machine. So like, it makes me feel a little bit better that I am burning myself out just a little bit, trying to keep up with editing and things like that for the podcast. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, this is what I want to do. This is, you know, you got to put yourself into it, whatever else you're doing.
And so like, you know, it took a while. It's like, I got good at acting. I got good at comedy, but then I had to kind of put the pieces together. I'm in LA and like I'm obviously know my cousin all my life and we've always, you know, we went to acting camps together as kids, but it's like he lives a mile away from me. It's a really wasted opportunity if we're not doing anything. So, you know, we hang out a lot, but like if we could sacrifice some time to write a sketch, hey, now we have something. If someone's like, what do you got, kid? It's like we got our thing that we could do, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we make a podcast, that forces us to do something together, right? Yeah. So like and we could have ideas exchanged while we produce that, even if like I'm the one editing and stuff like that, and I still have a full-time job and I still, you know, have to audition, you know, like whatever auditions come in and go to open mics and book shows and stuff like that. So it's like I feel like kind of doing the podcast and taking classes were kind of like those two things that helped kind of like kind of piece it all together and make it a more whole picture instead of just being like I'm skilled in this profession, you know. It's like now it's like I have something a little bit more sticky to glue it all together.
Absolutely. So
you're doing the right thing, Haley. You're doing the right thing. I know it's a bitch.
It is a bitch, but I appreciate the acknowledgement. I really do because, you know.
I see it.
If you don't get it from the people who are in your circle.
You do, Johnny.
John's been great, too, though. Let me tell you what.
I appreciate you.
Oh, that's nice. Well, that's nice. I thought that was you being like, I'm over here, too, bitch. I was like, John, too, bitch.
Let me tell you what. Johnny has been very flexible, though, and I do appreciate you for that because he's been able to roll with the punches, and there's more than one time where we've just been chatting, and I've been, why are we not recording this as a podcast? Yeah, what are we, like, Johnny, we're turning this onto a record. This is no longer just a private conversation.
I tried
that was Julian too. It's like, you know, we're so funny together, obviously. And then he's just like, oh my God, like we are losing, you know, we're losing mojo by like not turning this into art.
Right. Why is there not a microphone in front of me? Yeah. If we're this, you got to get this stuff on camera. It's too good to just leave it in the ether.
Yeah, and like, you know, we try to get better. It's like some episodes are going to be better than others. Some episodes you're up or down. But, you know, it's like once you've started doing better, it's like now you have like kind of a new stasis, a new standard. And it's like, hey, if we have like even a bad episode, at least it was like it was never as bad as our bad episode before that. You know, it's like so now it's like your worst case scenario is always improving. You know, it's never going to.
Oh, yeah. It's a constant evolution, right? And it's, you know, if you keep coming back to it and if you do stick with it, like you can't not get better at it.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
For sure. So I have a couple more questions. I'm usually the question guy. I put it together a good little list for you.
John does help me out with like writing the question portion of it. So appreciate you again for that. Look at this. Everybody just throwing around some appreciation. I think it's great. Just me and my little unicorns and rainbows. I like to acknowledge that stuff.
It's very like just an appreciative episode. And I feel very safe in this space. And thank you for having me and acknowledging.
It's absolutely a safe space, even though we did throw you off with the introduction because we thought it was kind of fun.
But one question, if you could play any part in a movie, what movie would it be and what part would you play?
Like the only role I've not the only role I ever wanted, but what was so clearly my number one for the longest time and still is, I'm just too long in the tooth for it now, but Spider-Man. I always wanted to play Spider-Man. Now if I ever get cast, it would be as like the alternate, the B universe Spider-Man, you know, the one who like already
I absolutely think you need to write that sketch, that sketch and put that on YouTube. I would watch that. Okay. I would watch like Spider-Man who's in his like, you know, I'm turning 30.
Well, and I don't know if you've seen the Spider-Verse films, but it's you know, it's like they have, it's like the one that I clearly am right now is the one that's voiced by Jake Johnson, right? From a New Girl. Yeah. That's like a little bit long in the tooth. He's like past his prime and stuff like that. I'm like, that's a Spider-Man I identify. I'm not some fresh faced high schooler or anything like that. But it's like, that was the role that I wanted for so long. And, but now it's like, it's funny that now in the new ones, there's like, even if it's animated, it's like, okay, there's a type of Spider-Man out there that could like exist in my demographic now. So
absolutely. Everything is available in the infinite multiverse, right?
Exactly.
Like I write, I do some writing too, like in the science fiction fantasy area. I have a fictional podcast. So like that's right up my alley. I write all about like the multiverse and stuff like that. And I would absolutely watch a Spider-Man that I could identify with because I'm turning 37 in 2 days. And let me tell you what, I would like to know what Wonder Woman in her late 30s was up to.
Haley, you know? I thought you were younger than me.
How old are you? Do we get to let's play that game for me for just a hot second?
I thought late 20s.
Here's the question.
What?
Are you padding your answer a little bit just to be nice?
No. Legitimately thought. I was like, who's this cool young girl who is like who wants to talk to my old crusty comedian ass, you know?
No, who is this like bitch who's coming into pre-menopause probably pretty shortly is what it is. That's where we're sitting. But I do appreciate the compliment. I will absolutely take it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hope it cools off some of your hot flashes.
Absolutely.
I know. Like, let me tell you what, these ring lights in here. Holy hell. Yeah. It's a rough time. I bet if I was up on stage and doing any of the things you do, all the nerves and things would probably just make it that much worse.
And I still get excited. I still, you know, as long as you do it, sometimes right before you go on stage, you're just like, I don't know any of my material. Or you just be like, wow, I don't know what I'm about to do. Or like, I don't know any of my stuff. Do I even remember what it's like to be a comedian? Like, it's something that you could, as simple as it is, it's you on a microphone, you could still like, feel like you forget how to do it. So sometimes the one thing that never fails is just standing in the pocket and just, okay, this is so lame. But one of my favorite like kind of principles on acting, and it's like a Stanislavski thing, and it's kind of like just a thought experiment. But if you're watching a play and there's like a cat that walks on stage, what's everyone going to look at? They're going to look at the cat. Are they going to look at the cat? The cat is not acting. The cat's just existing. And that's what we're really interested in. So the best actors aren't people you're looking at being like, wow, look how hard they're acting. Or, oh, they're clearly acting. The best actors you're just looking at, you're so compelled that they're existing. So we all just kind of want to exist as that cat. And it's so different on stand-up. Mm-hmm. People are so compelled by like, you know, what they see as like an honest interaction. And if you're just standing there, if you're feeling dumbfounded or befuddled, you know, just sit in that energy. People will absorb it and they'll find something humorous about it. So if you ever forget how to be a comic, just sit in the pocket and fucking take it.
I like that because, you know, don't we all have those moments where we feel like, I don't know if it's imposter syndrome or what it is, but you have that anxiety or you have that whatever. And I think it does make it we're all human. We all have those things. You got to just lean into it, and the audience is going to get it. It's going to be approachable, relatable. You know, we've all had those moments. But so and I know John was going to ask this. Does it get better over time from when you started? Like, would you look at where you started and say that you still have moments that are like really close to that same level of anxiety, or does it kind of taper off?
Yeah, it's like always before what you perceive to be like this huge opportunity. And you can just never account for what's going to happen that's outside of your control. Like, not that long ago, there's this comedy series called Don't Tell. And it's like this well-known comedy series, and they have, productions like all over the U.S. And my friend knows the Vegas booker. He booked us. And like, I know so many people who had this great tape from Don't Tell that just like completely launched their careers into another stratosphere. So I'm like miking so hard. I'm like getting my 15 down, like the 15 I'm going to do for that set. I know I'm going to crush because like I've been doing really well, and like I'm mixing new material with old material, so it's like stuff I'm excited to do, and like that energy is translating. And then finally the day happens, and I also have a theory about comedy shows in coffee shops, but so this is like in a coffee shop. It's like a coffee shop that serves beer, but it's like repurposed, you know, as like this space in Vegas. And I thought I freaking nailed it. Like, I was like, I'm delivering the jokes. I'm here in the pocket. And just like, I never got the consistent room full of consistent laughs that you really want. It's like, I'd say a joke, that half of the room laugh. I say another joke, the other half of the room laugh. I'm just like, how am I not getting y'all on the same page? And, you know, I want to hang myself. Like, I'm morose. My good buddy, who's a comedian, who he's already more dour than I am in general. He's like ready to lose it all in Vegas that night. Like, he's ready to like OD,
like giving it up.
Yeah. So what saved, I think, you know, my life, and it's just like such a small act of kindness. But the photographer who was there, I think her name is Kristen, and you know, I want to shout her out because like, and you know, she. Like we've ended up following each other on Instagram, and she shot all the Don't Tell shows. She told the bartender, and I wasn't there for this. The bartender told me this. The bartender's like, I want you to know the photographer came out and said the comics are doing well, but it's the audience is really kind of like weird, or like the audience is kind of letting them down. She's like, she's like, the comics are funny. Like, these are good comics, the audience. And I was like, that she said that to like, without a comic there, you know, to like, feel better about it and all that stuff. It's like that made my whole night better, you know. So it's like I was so anxious for this show. I thought I was ready. I thought I did pretty well. In fairness, like, and everyone did pretty well, but you're there to crush. You're there to have a life-changing set. So whenever you walk out, it's kind of lukewarm. It's you're just like, well, nothing's gonna change, you know. Like I don't change my life. But to hear that like people in the know were still like, okay, that was a good set. It was an off night. That made my whole night.
Well, but that also I think is something you should take away as, just because the crowd isn't necessarily giving the reaction that you want doesn't mean that no one in the crowd is noticing your talent or noticing that you're good. And you never know who's going to be there, who's going to see you. And, you know, there's plenty of times that I'm sure, because, you know, I've gone to a couple of comedy shows. I'm sure there's plenty of times when, you know, I might find something really funny and be like, what is wrong with you people? You're not like, why are you not laughing and having a good time? Like, you can't always account for those kind of things. So, you know, if she noticed, there's probably other people in the crowd who noticed too. And you never know when that big next person who wants you to be the mid-30s Spider-Man is going to be the one who's in the crowd.
No, it's true. It's true. And so, you know, that's why, like, I just can't let it beat me, even if, like, I'm dying and I'm screaming on the inside. It's like, I still got to take it on the chin and smile through it. And, you know, so it's like, you know, lesson learned. And, you know, you just can't put all your eggs in that one basket, because it's kind of crazy, like, thinking that I had a somewhat mediocre Don't Tell set and I'm like, my career is over. now I've never felt better about stuff because I have the UCB show tomorrow, you know, and now I'm like as optimistic as I've been, and you know, plenty of other great stuff is happening. So, you know, you just can't put all your eggs in one basket, or feel like, oh, I had my shot and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
So now treats, you know, I crumble back into this.
No, there's always something else coming up. There's always something on the horizon.
For sure.
People have short memories, you know?
Yeah.
That too.
Do you have any like if you have nerves or something like that, do you have anything you do before a set? Before, like, and probably an hour before you go out, do you have like, there's a comic I like, Joey Toco Diaz.
Oh, I love Joey. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Joey.
And he's also Cuban.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very Cuban.
Joey Coco Diaz, your friend, Brian Bogart is here and he would like very much to
always
work with you on a project.
No, I so want Joey to know I exist.
Oh, I'm so true.
Put it out into the universe. We'll get it.
Yeah. But like before a set, he wants to find something and he gets himself frazzled, like frustrated, pissed off or whatever. And then he goes out on stage right after he does a rant. Like that's how he gets out of his own head. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And if you know your material really well, that's great. If you're going to get like frazzled and it's going to fuck up your material, then
not
so great, you know? So yeah, that the fact that he can do that and get in his head, you know, I feel like more McConaughey in my stand-up, not like and just there. I just sit there and say my words real slow, you know, or like it's kind of more of my delivery is less ranty. There's like maybe some theatrics to it, but yeah, I do, you know, so it's like the opposite for me. Whatever the opposite of getting all riled up is, that's kind of my preparation.
Sit down, meditate for a little bit, right? Do some
I always, you know, it just comes down to breathing.
Remember spin class.
Yeah, exactly. And I noticed I'm like, it's not flattering, but it's like, you know, theater and yoga breaths are like right into your belly. It makes you look fat, but hey, if you're if it helps you pace your stand-up set, you know, who cares? Mm-hmm. Another rule of stand-up too is like, the moment you kill your ego, you're immediately funny. The moment you had like three good sets in a row and you're like, I've crushed my last three sets, here I go killing again. The moment you think you're a little bit cool, you have a bad set again, and then you're back at zero. And then that humility makes you funny again. And then you think you're cool again. And then you come crashing down again.
And it
happens every fucking time.
It's just a magnificent roller coaster that you get to keep riding.
Maybe I don't tell. I was like, I've been crushing. Like, watch me crush again. And once again, we're still going to officially blame the crowd on that one. But hey, maybe that. And you were saying like, you know, and blame the crowd or whatever. It's like every comic thinks. And to some reason, maybe they should. But every comic thinks that if it wasn't a bad set, even if the crowd is bad, they could have done something and should have done something to get them back on your side. Even if you had to, like, you know, break out of what your normal set was going to be, snap them back into it.
Well, comics in their own way are kind of a lot like musicians. It's never good enough. It could always be better. You know what I mean? Like, because when you play music, you get one shot at it. You can always start over, but then you look like a fucking blowjob. And then, you know, so it's like, you don't want to do that, but it's like you mess up and then it is what it is. You know, it's like, but
I think the primary difference between stand-up comedy and music is that people like music and they want to go see music. And they will show up for concerts. People fucking hate comedy.
I always thought it was an interesting thing with that. A lot of comics want to be musicians and a lot of musicians want to be comics. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was such a weird thing that though they want to like trade professions quite a bit.
Yeah. And like a lot of football players want to play basketball. It's like, you know, everyone, there's a grass always greener. My dear friend and like former acting teacher, her name's Miranda Luna. Her husband is Gabriel Luna, who is in The Last of Us. He was in the newest Terminator movie. Yeah. He's like a literal famous actor. And Small will put on a lot of live shows. Like, Gabe is booked to all of them. All the man wants to do is play guitar and sing. It's like he's not doing a Shakespeare monologue. He just like wants to sing. Like, every time I see him do a live performance, he's like singing, you know? So it's like so I think that's so precious that like this famous actor who's like known for being this like brooding leading man type is just like, so I'm gonna do, you know, Brooks and Dunn Neon Moon for you guys, and I'm like,
ah, yeah,
you know, like
I mean, that's so it is a little bit true though, right? That idea of like the grass is always greener. You
always
we have certain kind of conditioning, I think, just mm-hmm. as humans, that we think somehow what we see externally has to be better than what we have. And it's like, no, they deal with all the same bullshit that you're dealing with. And they're probably looking at you and looking at what you have and thinking, man, my life would be easier if I was that person.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, people are like, oh, man, look at you. You're doing it. And I really don't feel like I am, you know.
Yeah. I have a lot of that going on. So, yeah. You know what? No, you are doing it. It's valid. We were super excited that you said that you would be on the podcast. I was super jazzed about it. Loved looking
I've had
at
a
all
lot
your
of fun.
Stuff.
Yeah, you guys have been so much fun to hang out with. Yeah. I mean, thanks. And really good questions, too. And, you know, you guys.
Yeah, like, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I do have a few more if we
want. Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah. If you've got time, we want to be respectful.
No, I'm here. Yeah, yeah. I don't have to be at that other mic, you know, for a while. So you're good.
Okay. I got a couple more. I just want to know. I ask this to everybody, depending on what they do, comedy, acting, whatever. What is your comedy Mount Rushmore?
That's really good. Because
we're from the Dakotas. Wink, wink.
Yeah, that's once. Yeah. So it's not like. Whenever other people like ask about your Mount Rushmore blank, are you like, that's appropriation of Dakotans?
It is, yeah. And we're really upset about it. And if you
only
come here,
I can ask about who's on your Mount Rushmore.
Only we can, unless you bring us snacks, in which case you are forgiven.
In which case you can say
That's all you need. If you bring us snacks.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Also, I feel like no one ever asks anyone what their Mount Rushmore of like blank is unless they respect their opinion on that. So that's probably why I've never been asked that question before. So now I'm like, oh my God, this is my first Inside the Actor's Studio. Like, you guys.
Absolutely. Wow. This is your audition for it.
I don't know. I try to make it somewhat interviewee, somewhat inorganic. I try to let them kind of tell their tale and kind of hold back. When we do our solo ones, I talk way more. I'm not a weird, like, quiet guy or anything.
No, and I'll say the first ones that, like, kind of come to mind. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the order changes over time or there's one in, one out. But, like, here's, like, just who comes to mind and kind of, like, why I will say them. And we'll start with Robin Williams.
Of course.
And because, to me, he also represents the bridge between someone who's, like, a phenomenal comedic talent, like as a stand-up, but also like an otherworldly acting talent.
Yes.
And this is something that no comic wants to hear from another comic but this is kind of like why I got into comedy, was like I always wanted to be an actor. And then I noticed so many of the actors of that era who I loved, I was like, oh, they were all stand-up comics, like Adam Sandler, Nick Swardson, like that was like, you know, that all these.
I mean, look at classic SNL, Not Ready for Primetime Players. They all started in like the stand-up improv world and got to SNL and then
movies. And that was like content that was resonating with me. So I was like, oh, this is what I feel like I want to do and like stuff I'd want to act in. And like, oh, if these guys are comics, then I have to kind of force myself to be a comic. And it was like a really rocky road. I feel like I was bad at comedy for a long time because I had to like kind of unlearn some bad theater habits.
Yep.
You know, I came from the theater world where everyone's all cuddly. Like I said, all comics are like assholes. So it's like I come in and I'm like, hey guys, massage train. Not really. But like, you know, and there's like, who's this fucking ginger? You know, like
In here trying to be cuddly with everybody.
And also it's like, you know, and also when you first start and maybe you loved Louis C.K. Maybe once upon a time I could have put him on my Mount Rushmore, but we won't get into.
Yeah, this. Right. Are you allowed to anymore? What are the rules, right?
But yeah. So he was like a big influence. But like once again, he dealt with like a lot of powerful shit. And if you're like someone who's trying to emulate him, but you don't have the language to like really master his stuff, it's like you can get off to a really bad foot really fast if you like are trying to quote unquote be edgy, but like you're brand new, so you don't even know how to do it right. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, once again, I there are many self-inflicted wounds along the way. So anyways, Robin Williams, because he represents like acting and stand-up excellence.
Okay.
Dave Chappelle in large part too, because of his also propensity for like sketch. and writing. And like, is he the best actor? He's actually like a pretty good actor, but like, is he doesn't have to be the best actor. It's like he just delivers who he is and what he needs to in his sketches.
I mean, the Chappelle Show, that's why I love Donnell Rollins. It's like,
I love Donnell Rollins. Yeah. Yeah. And he's super funny. And I've seen him, I saw him perform with Chappelle at the Hollywood Bowl. I was there like 2 days before I got attacked. If you remember when that happened.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A third.
Okay.
George Carlin.
Love George Carlin.
Because of his perspective. He's like, he has the comic perspective. And like, it was like this, I saw something like recently, he just holds a place in my heart because his worldview, I think, is so transcendent.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, John Stewart did a tribute to him, and he was like, people called Carlin, you know, like cynical, like especially as he got older. But it's like, it's not that he's cynical. He's like, he loved humanity, but was disappointed by it. Like, behind every cynic is a disappointed optimist, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like Carlin did everything he had to do and the world let him down, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. And, but Carlin is on the Mount Rushmore for his worldview, for his ability to reinvent himself and his longevity. And that's special.
I agree with all those things. Those are reasons that I love Carlin too.
Yeah. And my last one, and you know, maybe this one could kind of rotate, you could rotate someone here or there, but maybe just because like I think he's the godfather of modern comedy. And like comedy stand up as we know it and as a social commentary wouldn't exist without this person. Would you have a guess, Johnny? I'm just curious.
It's one of two people. It's either Richard Pryor or
Richard Pryor is who was on my mind.
Richard Pryor, or who was the second one, Johnny?
Sam Kinison.
Oh yeah, not bad. Or you know who would have been a great one is Bill Hicks. But
Bill Hicks.
I'm gonna say Richard Pryor. But that is who was on my mind. And so like he's just true original. And you know, it's like kind of like you wouldn't have pop music without the Beatles. It's like, I don't know if you'd have comedy as we know without Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And I love a lot of his, like, even his early stuff that you can find on, like, YouTube now. It's really fun to go back and watch and see sort of the development, you know, over the course of his career is really, I think that for any of those comics, you know, when you can go back and, like, look over the course of a career like Carlin and that kind of thing and see them evolve, not just in comics and their craft, but as people and there, you know, for Carlin, I think I'm with you on that worldview thing and that he was able to mix that into his craft and what he did and still be very, very persuasive and very, you know, very clear and like, in the messages he was giving.
And it's like a worldview that I just like to call the truth. And I think like kind of the funny part is Pryor and I think Carlin have very similar worldviews, if not like, you know, like extremely similar, but it's like their language is different, their execution's different, their joke writing's different. So it's like two versions of the truth that are both like at times maybe like I don't know if they contradict each other, but it's like they're such different perspectives all saying the same thing, and I think that's a really beautiful thing.
Carlin was, in my mind, Carlin's almost as unique as almost like a Mitch Hedberg. You know what I mean? Kind of like
Hedberg was so just cut short.
Very much on lame. You know what I
mean? Like, I feel like the sunglasses and all this is kind of like its own Mitch Hedberg tribute.
I love Mitch Hedberg. So good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, once again, like, could Bill Hicks and Mitch Hedberg have been like on the Mount Rushmore too? It's like their careers were cut short, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm talking about like people who I love them so much, I could not do comedy, or like their brand of humor tickled me so much and like really challenged me, that is Louis C.K. for me. So I will put him on my Mount Rushmore, but
I always enjoyed Louis C.K. too. And
Everyone did.
Come up that, you know, things get like problematic. I guess I am toxic positivity is a little bit me, and I kind of think that, you know, Yeah. Everyone deserves an opportunity to be forgiven and get past things, I think, you know.
Right. And like,
you're not invalidating any of the people that were affected in a negative way, obviously, but
you got to consider his comedy is undeniable because there was a time where he was as big as Dave Chappelle. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, Louis C.K. was as big as comedy itself.
He was the guy. Yep. And then John Mulaney was the guy. Who I, you know, it's funny, like, I really loved them in order, and then they really rose to fame, like, right as I was, like, you know, as...
Right.
And then someone who I love currently, Nate Bargatze, I think is great.
Yeah. Okay.
His special, The Tennessee Kid, I thought was a great one. And so whenever people are like, who do you like? And if I ever want to bring up a comic that I like and has specials out there, but I don't think a lot of people know, he's super high up there.
Yeah. You know,
Mark Norman finally got his shot. My buddy, Ralph Barbosa, he just got his Netflix.
Yeah.
I saw the night he became a star. He was touring with a lot of, it was like some kind of Latino comedian thing that was happening. And it was with Chris Estrada, who wrote This Fool, from Melissa Villaseñor and a bunch of others. No one knew who Ralph was. So he put on Facebook, like, hey, I'm coming to L.A. If you want a comp ticket at the Laugh Factory, let me know. And then I go, and you know, it's like all these heavy hitters, all these no names, they're going one after another. Ralph is next, and like no one knows who he is. Mm-hmm. That all changed after this night. But I knew, like, no one knew who he is. They introduce him, he comes on stage, and then he just, I don't know exactly what he says, but like he just acknowledges how quiet the crowd was and while he was getting up there.
Yeah,
like, oh, that's how it's gonna be. The crowd just like died instantly and just never stopped laughing after that. It's like he called them out. They loved him for it. He had him right where he wanted him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Ralph is about to blow up. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've been seeing that name on my YouTube feed. He's been on, he was on the Birdcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was on What's Up Fool with Felipe Esparza.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that name sounds very familiar.
And I booked him on shows in Austin. You know, he was just a local Austin comic. Like, and one obviously that I identified as being very funny, but there's so many funny people you never know who's going to break through. And what I'll say about Ralph is, like, he's just someone who I never saw have a bad set, you know? So, like, how can you ignore that guy?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know what? I definitely believe that is available to you as well. And we hope that you do not forget us when you pop off and when you are Spider-Man. we would love very much to have you back.
I'd love to come back. There's been a lot.
But like one more person too that I think could have been bigger than life itself is Dave Attell. I think if he pushed his career, he could have been as big as Louis C.K.
He chooses not to.
He's very much a New York comic.
He's in his own feels, you know.
It is what it is.
And I love that. I love him for that because he's being genuine. But it's
he has his place in New York and he just lives it up.
I guess I don't like just throwing shade, especially like to people who obviously like are like literally impede me if like this. I don't imagine this ever servicing. But like, did you ever see Bumping Mics? With him and Jeff Ross, Dave Attell and Jeff Ross.
I don't think I've seen that.
I know what you're talking about, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's a fun, it's like a three episode. They go to cities and they kind of like roast each other and they like high five their mics whenever they do. And it's just like, and Jeff Ross, you know, a lot of people accuse him of kind of building his roast empire off the labor of like kind of others and like maybe not, you know, kind of caring more about like being cool and looking cool and how he's received and like maybe his content and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so like to watch Dave Attell run circles around Jeff Ross.
Oh yeah.
And Jeff Ross is like wearing like affliction attire or like whatever the equivalent is. And I'm just like, and like, I don't know. There's rumors that like he has this like teenage companion or whatever that just like, and he's like, well, we don't have sex. She's just a friend. I'm like, that's even weirder. I'd almost rather, but you know, it's like, so it's like, once again, it's like, Dave goes on stage, it seems to me, goes on stage and still has that same fear and doesn't think he looks cool and still knows he's good, but he's always like, well, you know, what does fate have in store for me? And Jeff Ross is kind of like, you just get the feeling, he goes up there and he's like, I'm Jeff Ross. You love it. I'm roasting you. Let's do this. Yeah. And he's like, you know, you're not a DJ with an air horn, you know, like go up there and do the fucking jokes. And, yeah. and so like bumping mics, I want you to watch it just to like watch.
I'm checking it for sure.
Yeah. If you love David Tell, yeah. that's like what I think I love is best Tell. And such a microcosm of like their dynamic. And obviously they're friends. Dave would never yeah. say this, but as neutral third party, I'm watching and I'm like, that's what I see.
For sure.
Like they're really friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're friends. And, so it's like,
yeah. And I was going to say, I'll leave you with one more question.
Yeah.
Either this is a question that it could be what's on it or what would be on it, but what's on your rider?
My rider?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, forgive my ignorance. What is a rider?
The comedy thing, like what you have the venues.
What is required when your services are being.
Oh, like my bio.
Usually you have to have a bowl full of green M&M's,
my requirements. This is the sad state of stand-up comedy, obviously, all right. that I had to ask that question. No, don't worry.
We're prepping you for popping off. We're just getting you ready.
But that's also the thing is so many comics have such low standards. Also because it's like for the most part, we just need a microphone and a good sound system. Sometimes they even fuck that up though.
Yeah. So,
you can't have it all, right?
Yeah. You know, it's just like you get used to varying qualities of green room, you know? And obviously I'm not like a national touring headliner. So it's like usually I'm a comic booked onto a show that either that headliner's on, or it's a show where it's just like kind of the basic agreement is like someone will send you the message on Instagram, like everyone's getting paid this, sets for 10 minutes,
yeah.
and like light at 8 minutes or whatever. So like my rider's usually just like the Instagram message or the booking email or something like that. But if I'm like touring, well, and I like I featured for my friend who was headlining and he does like kind of the contracts, mm-hmm. the paperwork. So I know like he has a rider of stuff and like I've been a benefactor of those. But I didn't see the paperwork itself.
Okay, so here's the bigger question then. When you are big, famous, Dave Chappelle when you pop off, what will you want to add to your writer?
What would be on it?
Yeah, you know, for snacks, I really like dried fruit, like dried mango, raw almonds.
So you're going to like really be LA about it.
But that's also just, that's what I
love. Sorry, I had to.
No. That's fair. Like I said, I'm just a living, breathing cliche, but I've liked this stuff since I lived in Austin, which also might be an Austin cliche. But it's like, I fucking love like raw food and raw nuts or like, you know.
Can we clip that content out? I love raw nuts. Can we?
Can we isolate that audio?
Can we get that as a soundbite?
Blow it down.
There we go.
And then like, man, you know, there was actually one time I was like playing a mascot at an event. It was like something that my agent booked for me back in Austin. This was a number of years ago with a guy who's a Willie Nelson impersonator. And he, you know, in his rider was a handle of Jack Daniels. And he let me drink from his handle that he had backstage.
Nice.
And so I was like, yeah, you know, like, you know, something, a thing of whiskey or like, something there. So like I want my health food, you know, some Celsius if I want it. Depends on what time I'm getting there. I only try to drink a Celsius early in the day, right before I work out. And you know, but so like maybe it wouldn't be appropriate there, but and then you know, filtered water and a protein shake. You know, something to film there.
I think I would start asking for really weird things. Like I need 3 crow's feet in a jar and like
How you know that they read it. You know, that's the logic behind it. It's not because they wanted a bunch of brown M&Ms. It's because they know that they read the contract. Yeah.
Well, and you want to weird people out a little bit if you can, because that's kind of fun.
Yeah. You want to build your legend, you know, so that way in the roadie community, like, oh my God, this Haley chick, she wanted 3 crow's feet. And then you're like, yeah.
And then she was like lighting incense and doing some weird chanting. I don't know what was going on. Yeah.
Right. Like,
and then when you see me get big and successful, you can know that I was doing some serious witchcraft.
I was about to say, Like it'd be funny to have a pentagram requested in your rider. Like,
you have to draw me a pentagram of salt or I will not sit in the green room. I need to have my little protective circle. That would be hilarious.
And think of the moral dilemma of someone who's like a deeply Christian, who's like who's working that gig and they have to draw that pentagram. There's like
That right there, there's a fantastic sketch that you also need to write and put up on YouTube for me,
that's
please.
Really funny. Yeah.
You'll probably get the roadies from Wayne's World 2 that had to beat the store clerk with his own shoes and steal all the bread.
I always think about that every time. Like, a bloody Bengal tiger. Yeah, I think about that. Or Ozzy wouldn't go on stage.
I love you're it. Right. Fantastic.
They had to beat them to death with their own shoes.
So good. Well, thank you. I do want to wrap up and make sure that you get to your open mic night. So go ahead and plug any of your stuff. You know, where can people find you? What you have coming up? Let the audience know.
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram because I always post details to my shows. It's Brian, Brian dot Bogart, Bogart. I have a podcast with my cousin, Guantanamo Bays. It's a Cuban cousin, Kiki. And that's Bays, Baes. Yeah, we're the Guantanamo Bays. We'll already have this show, but yeah, we have our spank at Upright Citizens Brigade tomorrow at 7 p.m. LA time. And if they pick us up, I'll keep you guys updated on when that show's recurring. And if I'm doing stand up around you, come find me, and I'd love to meet y'all.
Awesome. Sure. Love it. Thank you so much. Well, I have been Haley.
And I've been Johnny.
And that's been Brian.
Brian.
I've been Brian.
And
thank
this
you.
Has been Johnny, Haley, Brian, Day of Fun.
Day of Fun. Yay.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening, y'all. Do check out all the links below in the description where you can find Brian. We're going to share all your stuff below. And check us out, get on our Patreon, support us so that, you know, we can pop off too and we can all hang out and have really weird writers.
Sweet.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye. Yeah.